I will not let you go unless you bless me. Welcome back to Hackberry House, a podcast devoted to the Word of God and the persecuted church in North Korea. My name is Bob. This is podcast number 487. It is June 3rd, 2016. Today we begin with a wrestling match between God and a man. Genesis 32, 24 following. Why would God, this is the question of the day, why would God send a man, quote unquote, to wrestle with Jacob when it was obvious that the man was far more powerful and could so easily win the contest? What's that all about? Who was the man? Did Jacob know who he was? Well, we're not told who the man was, but the capital letters in Bible versions let us know where the translators stood on the matter. That's for sure. They believe that this man was divine. Obviously, he was either divine or angelic. A man, actually three of them, appeared to Abraham, remember, at his tent. He's called a man, but we know later from the story that one of them was the Lord. Two of them were angels. So, either divinity or angels can appear as men. And then the King of Righteousness, remember him? The King of Peace, the priest of God Most High, Melchizedek, a man, appeared to Abraham later in the story. Second precedent for God looking like a man. I think the evidence points to the divine here, too. Did Jacob know? Somewhere in the middle of the fight, it became apparent to Jacob that he was wrestling with God. We know this because humans do not ask humans or even angels to bless them. But that's what Jacob asked. From the stories of his grandfather to his own encounters with seriously heavenly beings, including hosts of angels on at least two occasions, Jacob knew that his life was not an ordinary life, but that divine intervention could be expected from time to time. He knew. But my first question is perhaps the most intriguing and the most instructive for our purposes. God, in whatever form he appears, is so far greater in power and might as not to be even casually compared. Oh my, no contest. What's going on here? Why a fight? Almost immediately the discussion wants to come to our own encounters with this God. He's called on us to seek him with the whole heart, though he is immediately available anywhere, anytime. He asks us to fight a battle with and for him, when he could so easily fight all these battles without us. He asks us to intercede when he is totally aware of the needs of all those for whom we are praying. What is this? Now, this is called grace. Yeah, this is called condescension. This is training. This is preparation for another world soon to come. This is partnership of the most undeserved variety. Come, let us reason together, he says, when his own reasoning and planning and performing will easily carry the day. David says, what is man that you're even mindful of him at all? That's the question. And for it and for the question above, I have absolutely no answer. Do you? Will you start thinking about that? Question 46 on our long list of questions through the Bible. Genesis 33, 12 and following. Did Jacob ever go to Mount Seir as promised? Why or why not? We're talking about his promise to Esau. Hey, I'll meet you later. We'll talk later. And no, he never did as far as the text is concerned. It's a strange series of events. The night before, a wrestling match with God. As Esau approaches, he is scared out of his mind, but God appears to him. So afraid, but little time to wallow in the fear, as the man keeps his attention during the night hours. By morning, his thoughts are more centered in the victory that was graciously allowed him, notwithstanding the pain in his thigh. And here comes Esau. He knows exactly what to do, if he lives. And if he dies, probably not a problem either. He's not afraid anymore. His meeting with Esau turns out to be friendly enough, and so friendly that Esau invites him to come home with him in Mount Seir, later called Edom in the scriptures. Now, Edom is much farther south than Jacob was planning to go. Nevertheless, to make nice with his brother and the accompanying 400-man militia, he promises he'll certainly be there. Esau offers to guide him, even to leave some of his men to help along the way. Jacob politely refuses the escort, but promises dutifully to show up at his house later. He then proceeds to go to Sukkoth, then to Shechem, then to Bethel, three locations definitely not even near Edom. Next time we see Esau, and next time Jacob sees him, as far as we know, they're at the funeral of their father Isaac. I wonder what kind of meeting that was. Why did Jacob decide not to go to his brother's home? Perhaps he was afraid that Esau still meant him harm and would feel more bold in executing that harm on his own turf. Maybe he was going to make him a captive. Perhaps the man who wrestled with him, God, had instructed him regarding his relationship with Esau, that it could never be close, that God had a plan for him in Canaan, and he had to stay on track with that plan. Genesis 35:28. How old was Isaac? We're on another question, by the way. How old was Isaac when he first blessed his sons with a vision problem? Blessed his sons with a vision problem? See Genesis 25:26 and 26:34. How old was he when he died? Now, do you remember the vision problem? He can't see. And Esau, would you go hunt some things for me? I can't see too well. I'm going to die, blah, blah. How old was he when he actually died, though? And so how do you explain his feelings in chapter 27, verses 1 and 2? Let's answer these things. It's kind of a quick answer. We're led to believe that Isaac was about to die on that fateful day when he sent Esau out for some deer meat. Remember? We know that he was about 100 years old, and you get to be 100 years old, you might think you're about to die for sure. The twins were born when he was 60. Jacob and Esau were born when he was 60. They were at least 40 when this incident occurred, we know from other scriptures. So, 100 years, failing eyesight, gave him the feeling, it's about over for me, I'm going to be gathered to my people sooner than later. But the text above clearly states he was 180 when he died. Now you say, that's not a serious question. No. And an easy answer. Isn't that true? All the questions that are not too serious, you can get easy answers for. But also a lesson for us in it somewhere, like don't give up on your life here until it's over. It ain't over till it's over. Keep on going. You've got some things to do before that day. And how about our next question? 48, Genesis 37:2, 21 and 26. Who was the mother of the two sons that saved Joseph's life? Who was the mother of the two sons that saved Joseph's life? We're now in the story of Joseph. And by the way, you know this is not commentary through the Bible, verse by verse. So I'm not explaining things as we go along. I'm assuming you're going to go to those passages and read the question, read the verses, and most, many of you already know what the text is already. But we're in the life of Joseph. This is not totally a trivia question. I had a point in asking it. For the mother. It seems that the children of Israel, the originals, when they were really children, were already dividing up into groups as they grew up. The first verses of the chapter indicate that the sons of Zilpah and Bilhah were one such division and were perhaps causing the most problems. Joseph reported their deeds to Dad regularly. No mention is made of the sons of Leah, nor of his full brother, Benjamin. The plot to kill Jacob outright was first thwarted by Reuben, the first son of Leah. Later, Judah seconded that motion. Judah was the fourth son of Leah. They were all agreed that the son of Rachel had to go. but the boys born from Jacob's first wife ruled the day. The whole episode speaks to the awful consequences of not obeying God and practicing His best plan for us, one man, one woman. But of this bunch of divided men came Israel, the nation, the people of God, chosen from the foundation of the world. One can't help fast-forwarding nearly 2,000 years to another ragtag bunch of ordinary men, 12 of them, too, who by God's grace, and only by God's grace, don't put halos on these men before it's time, the 12 disciples changed their world and instituted yet another living organism of God in the earth, the Holy Church of Jesus. 12 men, 12 men. 12 holy, holy men? Nope. God made them holy, but they were just as ordinary as the day is long. The text is clear about that. What might He do with you and me is my point, I think. What might He do with you or me? Number 49, Genesis 38, verses 1 and 2. Abraham and Isaac made it clear to their sons that they were not to marry a daughter of a Canaanite. Now, how could Judah have missed this precept? And Dinah, remember her. And, of course, the Bible gives no answer to this one, except what I've already hinted at in the last question. As one of a group of brothers who could so easily rid themselves of a brother, even if only a half-brother, we can imagine that the precepts which come from a godly heritage that were not being well received. The hardness of their heart is picked up even before the treachery with Joseph, as they could not perceive spiritual truth in the form of Jacob's dream. Perhaps they considered the faith of their fathers to be mixed with much hypocrisy. I mean, Jacob loved and cared for four women. The family was evidently filled with strife and jealousy, favoritism, rejection. All the ills of dysfunctional families had set in. This was a family of God's choosing. They were something special, yes. Dad had had his encounters, but what of it? They had not had any of their own. Life seemed very normal and very difficult. Where was God in all of this? If you had been living there, you would not have seen what we see now, what we know now. You would have seen a pretty ordinary, messed up family with its daily issues, troubles. So unbelief set in and carried Judah to his own way of life, apart from his brothers and father for a while. Later, Scripture tells of some changes in him. Let's do question 50 real quickly, and then 51, Genesis 41-45. Question, is the nation of Israel from purely Hebrew blood? Judah married a Canaanite. That's right. Judah married a Canaanite. His offspring were therefore mixed. We look at this as a serious aberration on Judah's part, but simultaneous to this is the giving of an Egyptian wife to Joseph right around the same time period. An Egyptian wife. His two famous sons, Joseph and Judah. Joseph and Judah, the best, right? They married non-Jews. They were half Egyptian, the two famous sons of Joseph, Manasseh and Ephraim. They were half Egyptian. It's a little told tale, but God has included Gentiles in His plan for quite some time. Aren't you glad? You better be. One more for today, number 51, Genesis 44:14. Who had become the leader and spokesman of the, quote, children of Israel? Well, either the author knows what is coming, and I'm talking about Genesis 44:14, or in fact, Judah and his brothers is the way all were looking at things now. Joseph is truly God's man of the hour, but it's the lion from Judah who will prevail. You see the character of God being formed in this man even now, offering his life and eternal blame to Pharaoh if anything goes wrong, as opposed to Reuben offering his two sons. Even offering to stay in Egypt was Judah in place of Benjamin. When Joseph demanded that Benjamin be his prisoner, have you read the story? I'm assuming in all these questions you've read the story. Please go back and read it. He was sent by Jacob, Judah was, ahead of the group that went to Egypt eventually to lead the way. That's what's happening here. He's becoming the leader. He's becoming the spokesman. Judah, the spokesman. Wow. Judah, showing the compassion, the caring. Why not Reuben and his brothers? Reuben's the firstborn of the legal wife. Why the fourthborn? God has his hand on Judah and Judah's descendants, David, and the great king of the tribe of Judah, and Jesus himself. Soon prophecies will center on this man, Judah, that will shock him and will bless us while we read. And that's as far as we can go today. Thanks for being with me. It's been an interesting week of questions, I think. I hope you've enjoyed the answers. Again, I've got to remind you, you've got to read the text that I give you and some of the background material. I won't have time to go through all of that. I'm going to assume that you know the context when you're reading these questions and answers. This will all be in book form someday. Hey, when contacting me, ask a question about the Bible somewhere. Maybe kind of follow along. If I've already skipped something, we're going to have to move ahead. I'm in 1 Samuel, 2 Samuel now, asking questions. But you can ask some things before I come to it on sermon audio. Send a prayer request. Just say hi. It's good to hear from you. Thank you so much for being with me through the days, weeks, months, years. God bless you. We will be back, not tomorrow, but Sunday, with a North Korea report from Crossing Borders. We started it last week. We're going to continue that until that's finished. And Monday, let's see. I don't have those questions in front of me, but we'll continue on. We're about finished with Genesis. We'll move right into Exodus. And Lord willing, continue our way through the Bible as God gives grace. Have a good day today. Don't forget where we started, Genesis 32:26. I will not let you go, says Jacob, unless you bless me. What a prayer. That's not a bad one for us too. Bye-bye.